Hello, and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And for the very first time, we are joined by the marketing director at TechCrunch, Alexandra Ames. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, happy to be here.
How is it this is your first time, Alex? I just feel like you've done this before, no? Or do we just find time to talk about shows to the point where I feel like you have... been on the show before.
I think this is kind of like my specialty. I don't know that, you know, you guys know that I'm like a super like romance reality TV guru. So like our topic is pretty on point for me today.
I'm so excited.
So that topic is the show Love is Blind, which is a reality dating show on Netflix. And when I was asking around to find out who had seen the show, the truth came out, which is that, Alex, you've seen the entire series twice? Well, except for the reunion episode.
Yeah, that I've only seen once, and that was about an hour ago I saw that.
Right, because you were working by preparing for the podcast.
It's also like midnight in Paris, isn't it? Like, can't she just do what she wants?
Well, it didn't come out until Thursday, and I just flew back from San Francisco. So I was experiencing some jet lag, doing some work. So I watched it kind of this morning, basically.
Yeah, I'm down for that. I did the same thing, pretty much.
Well, I think, so we're probably going to dive into spoilers pretty quickly, because there's a lot of twists and turns on this, but let's just talk in general terms about what the concept of the show is, or as they describe it multiple times, the experiment. Alex, do you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, essentially, you know, you have a group of guys, a group of girls, and they're all kind of brought to this bachelor-esque place where they're going to live for the next 10 days, separated by gender. And the purpose is that they're going to essentially date the opposite gender in these pods that are connected by, I guess, a thin wall. And you go into these pods, you don't see the other person, and you're supposed to date them by talking to them and establishing a relationship. And ultimately, over the period of those first 10 days, you know, if you find somebody that you really like, then you can propose to them. And within, I think, 3 weeks after that, there's a wedding that those two people will go to. So ultimately, it's, it's based on the concept that, you know, you can find somebody to fall in love with without even seeing them beforehand. So
I think it's worthwhile to talk about the fact that, like, to me, you have to measure reality romance shows by the godfather of them all, right? Which is The Bachelor. And I wouldn't call myself an expert or anything in reality romance overall, but I have watched The Bachelor. Yeah, I've watched The Bachelor and its myriad spinoffs for many, many years, off and on. And, you know, I have dabbled in some other, like, playful shows. What was that one, Anthony, that I loved on VH1 with all the queer people that were dating? Remember?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
Do you know what this is, Alex? It's like Are You the One is what it's called. Have you heard of Are You the One? You'd like it, Alex. It's pretty interesting. But I won't diverge too far. Okay, so I think you have to measure it against The Bachelor. And one of the things that I really appreciated with Love is Blind is that, like, The Bachelor feels so, like, environmental. Like, it literally, they take your phone, they take away magazines, like, any outside world, TV, internet. You are stuck just speaking to people, and you're never in, like, an environment that's your own. Even when they, like, go to, like, hometowns and see, like, their family and friends, like, how weird. Imagine, like, being in your childhood home with, like, 12 cameras, right? And, like, producers everywhere. Like, you're never really in your true environment. And I will say that, like, of course, Love is Blind does not really put them in their true environment, but it does insert, like real world effects into the show, which I think is way more interesting, where you have people you've dated in the past, like exes who are like more present and around and living in the same apartment complex as you, and you have your phone, and like we heard people fight over like you're more busy on your phone than you are with me, and like you are talking to your parents and you're talking to other people, and like it just feels you're going to work, right? Like you continue on like going to work, and it just, to me, that part of this is something that like I feel like no like romance reality show has really tried very hard to do, or at least not one that I've seen, where you're like they're trying to put you as much in your real world as they possibly can and make the relationship feel like it has some of the same, they talked about it a lot, like outside pressures, right? Like, oh, you're happy when you're just talking, and then maybe you graduate to being happy when you're talking and physically in the same room together and like can see each other and touch each other. But what about all this other shit, like your parents and your friends and your job and your vices and your bad habits and your, you know what I mean? Like, I just thought that that was much more interesting.
Yeah, I think that it definitely like evolves it into something that's a little bit more approachable to everyday people, but it still retains a little bit of that, you know, produced suspenseful type of drama that you get from The Bachelor. And I think, right, like in the myriad of, you know, romance reality, I think that to me, the show is a little bit Bachelor, a little bit Big Brother, and also a little bit mm-hmm. Married at First Sight. And I particularly like Married at First Sight. That's probably, you know, my little guilty pleasure. You know, because they match people. It's not, you're not like doing it yourself. It's not self-matching kind of that Love is Blind does, but you get matched by experts, and then you basically get married to somebody, and then they follow the progression of your marriage, you know, across 8 weeks, and then at the end of the 8 weeks, you get to decide whether or not you're going to stay or get a divorce. So I think the reason why I'm super fascinated about Love is Blind is it kind of takes a little bit of that, or adds that kind of drama of finding your mate that's missing, I think, from Married at First Sight, but also combines it with like the reality, like you said. And I think it makes it a little bit more approachable for people to say like, oh, well, maybe this is something that is like, maybe this is something I should think about in terms of like how I approach my, you know, romantic decision-making potentially.
Right. Like, you know, who wrote that book, Modern Love?
It was...
Or Modern Romance. Aziz Ansari. And in it, they talked a lot about how like back in the day, like 50, 60 years ago, that like the vast majority of married couples lived like in or around like the same block. Like they lived literally within like a mile of each other, like the vast majority of them. And then suddenly like our mentality shifted to this idea of like finding your soulmate, right? Like more than just like finding a stable, trusted partner to like kind of do this whole life thing with. They were like, no, it's got to be like over the moon, World Series kind of love. You know what I mean? Blah, blah, blah. And I think that we might be having a bit of a like course correction mentally. Maybe I'm off base, but like culturally speaking, I think most people understand that it's not hard to actually find love, right? Like I think, and The Bachelor is a great example of this. The Bachelor has this mentality of like, oh, well, you know, you will be in love at the end of this, like without a doubt. Like, and they build it, design it specifically to do that with all these like romantic vacations and like exotic places to be and like, you know, these sexy hotel rooms and all of that shit, you know, like that extra sparkle, right? Anyone can fall in love if they're put in the right scenario, right? Like, that's not hard to do. What's hard is to like, how do you feel 8 weeks later, really? Like, is that something that could really last? And then how do you feel like 6 months later? And how do you feel 2 years later? Like, that's actually what's interesting, I think, now, is like not whether or not someone can find love. It's like, can you build a love that can survive, right? Like, truly. And this kind, obviously, this is like just like a very weak version of that. If we're talking about like this little 6 week or 8 week process, it's kind of weird. Although Love is Blind was shot in 2018, right? So yeah. Like, technically,
oh, really? Wow,
the couples okay. that are still married at the reunion have been married for like a year and a half at least, right? Or at least like, you know, a year and change, if not more. So I don't know. I think that part of it is really interesting, right? Like the idea that like some of these shows are shifting to like, can you make the choice of being in love, right? Which I think is the longer lasting thing, to like just be like, I am committed to this, better for better or worse, right? Like that's why it's part of the vows. As opposed to like, do I like have some chemistry and connection with this person? Like, yeah, you can find that easily. Like, go out and talk to people, you will find chemistry and connections. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just that's how people work. It's just, is that the one that you can tolerate for the rest of your life?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the most striking things to me is how, and again, not being as familiar with this kind of show, is just, I think when I went into it, I was like, oh my God, are they going to be in the pods for 10 episodes? How am I going to be able to sit through that? But it turns out that, in fact, like you said, it's sort of structured in this way where actually the Love is Blind part of the experiment is really just the first two episodes, or, you know, 2 to 3 episodes. And that's all sort of leading up to, you know, marriage proposals. And then they sort of, as you said, they sort of gradually stage it in a way where you're kind of re-entering the real world. So then they go on this vacation together in Mexico. Well, so they're not seeing each other. And then once you've proposed, they can actually finally see each other. They get to sort of be like, yeah, like this is still, I still want to do this. They go to this on this vacation in Mexico. And then they, you know, move back into the real world. And then that sort of culminates in the weddings and then a reunion episode, which just aired. And so it is, like you said, starts out in this very artificial environment where you're entirely focused on finding this person. You can't see them. You're in this, like, entirely removed environment. You don't have the internet. Because I guess partly because they don't want people to be able to, like, look up and see what these people look like, you know, their dates look like. And so I thought that was like a smart way to do it, that it was at the beginning, it's the really high concept part. And then it's much more just like that reality that you're talking about, like, oh shit, is this really gonna work?
And they did a great job. I mean, I have to say, casting wise, like, you know, you never know what you're gonna get on reality TV, I feel like, with these casts and stuff. I'm not involved in that industry whatsoever, so I have no idea how these things go. I've never tried out to be on a reality show or anything, so I don't know what that all looks like. But I do have to say that it was, you know, when we're talking about like what this feels like, it almost, to me, I don't know, Alex, did you watch, what's the show that Daryl loves, Anthony, that has all the
Terrace House?
Do you watch Terrace House, Alex?
No, what was that about?
So it's like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like the most muted reality show in the world. Like, it's like nothing happens on that show. It's like if you had to do the polar opposite of like Real Housewives, right? Like, it's just like, take it all the way down to like the subtlest flick of the eyebrow, or this like thrice veiled comment about like dinner tonight that really means something like 4 or 5 layers deep. These young people living in a house together, forming relationships, friendships, working
in Japan,
but like nothing ever, like anything that happens is so small when you compare it to like, I don't know, American reality television, right? Where we're like throwing tables and like, you know, breaking wine glasses and stuff. And like, but like it is intense and it is dramatic, but it's just in this really tight, quiet way. And I feel like Love is Blind is like somewhere where like there's an actual super middle ground, right? Because like stuff definitely happens and people yell and people are like wild and, you know, shit hits the fan, so to speak. But they're also like, a good weaving in of the more subtle, nuanced things that happen, you know, as opposed to just nonstop, like, bah, 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 you know, it's like got a good mix. And I think some of the people were definitely interesting characters. I'm excited for when we get into spoilers because I have some specific thoughts for people, but I'll wait.
Yeah, I mean, the character, as you said, you know, I think the casting was on point. I thought it was really interesting how, you know, they started out with, like, you know, I think 20-ish, 25-ish, you know, pairs of men and women. And they ended up with, what, like, just a few couples.
10, I think. Yeah, 10 total or something.
Yeah, so, like, some, and they do some outtakes. But I think it would be kind of interesting to see, you know, what happened with those other people. You know, I'm sure there's lots of footage of, you know, dates not happening, going so well. Maybe people proposed and maybe when they saw each other, it didn't necessarily work out. Like, you know, I would be interested in learning about, like, those stories and those journeys as well, because it's not always, you know, picture perfect at the end. And I think a lot of people could relate to it. But specifically for the people that ended up, you know, getting proposed to or proposing, you know, those characters, I believe, like their stories, like I felt just really connected to them in a way that I don't think that you can really connect to with other dating reality shows like The Bachelor. I just felt they were really relatable. I felt myself like I was, you know, definitely tearing up in a lot of instances with some of the stories. You know, so I think it's compelling, you know, in that character development position as well.
Yeah, well, and we also have, like, you know, you also have people who are like Giannina, for example, who just feels like she's an actress at heart. Like, I don't know if she's actually acting. Like, it is true to herself, but it just feels like something out of a movie, like most of what she says and does, for whatever reason. Like, particularly when she's upset, she's just like, I don't know if you cared at all, you know? And it's just like, I don't know how she does it, but it just feels so scripted and, like, acted, even though I feel like it's actually genuine from her, which is interesting. And then you have some, like, none of them are particular, like, they're all good looking, like,
right,
generally sure. Good looking, but then they're not, like, stupidly good looking, where you're like, that's not a real person. Like, that person lives in LA and, like, is brunching on a Wednesday. Like, that's not a human. Like, that's just, like, a right. Pretty
person. Some of them are that level of good looking, but they're also people who are just, like, normal good looking.
Yes, totally. It doesn't feel like so swinging in that direction of, like, just, like, unrealistically good looking. You know what I mean? Like, they're generally, like, all of them are, like, down to earth good looking. And I just appreciated that. And then there's some, like, you know, interesting characters. Some I think that made better people when they were in their coupling than they did outside of it. Like, I hated them at the beginning and then they became, like, some of my favorite people just by factor of being, like, maybe not with the right person, because I don't necessarily think I believe in any of these couples, if we're being real, but sorry but, you know, like, better than they were at the beginning. You know, like a growth trajectory, right? Like, sometimes you date someone and, like, their main purpose, even though it was nice and you love them, blah blah blah, is just to, like, teach you about yourself, and then you go right. On like these all there's some that really feel very poignantly like that, right? Like, that they're really gonna teach each other something,
and that they're probably gonna be better at being a boyfriend or girlfriend, husband, wife, with whoever comes later.
Exactly. Like, they're actually growing as people together, which is good. I think that's, you know, in many instances, unless you are with the, quote, you know, the one, and you're calling it, and that's going to be the rest of your life. Most of our relationships are that, friendships and otherwise, right?
And you have to think it's kind of like a really unique, high pressure situation that they're going through similar experiences. So that in itself is bonding.
Totally.
I mean, so the other thing I wanted to touch on before we get into spoilers, which I think we should do pretty soon, is just, I mean, how did we think about this setup, which obviously is primarily a setup for good television, but they really, especially at the beginning, emphasized this idea of finding, you know, that this can be a way to get rid of the sort of superficial, you know, you're looking on Tinder, you swipe right or left, but instead you have to, like, focus on the things beyond looks and potentially, you know, build a much stronger connection before you even realize what somebody looks like. And, you know, I mean, the other thing that struck me about the setup was also the fact that not only are you not seeing what they look like, but you're in a situation where all you're doing is talking to each other about each other. Whereas I think a lot of early dating can be that, but it can also be like, let's have a meal together, let's go to a movie together, let's go do something fun together. And like all the sort of activity things that you can sort of structure dating around gets stripped away. And so it's really just, let's sit down and grill each other about who we are and how we would like be together as husband and wife. And I don't know that I would ever want to do that.
Well, and I think when you like, there's something interesting to be said about like how people felt during the, you could really ask yourself if you're in a pod like that and all you have is conversation, literally. And it's hard to keep conversation going for hours and hours sometimes. Right. And like, how you feel in the moments where you're transitioning to a new topic or there's nothing to say for a second, like, could say a lot about how you feel about a person, right? Like, well, if you feel comfortable and calm and confident in that moment and you're like, what else do I want to tell this person? Like, that's a big tell, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, definitely. I'm pretty sure that probably played out in a lot of, you know, those relationships that didn't end up working out. You know, and there is something to say about like those in-person interactions that speak louder than words, I guess, you know, and in the absence of seeing like, you know, facial expressions and getting feedback from that person can make conversation super awkward, you know. But I think that, you know, going into it as, you know, this person is a blank slate, I think it does kind of give off, or I think it takes change your perspective, I think, when you're approaching getting to know somebody, just because you don't have those outside indicators that are, you know, triggering any, you know, underlying biases that you might have that maybe you don't even know about, you know, as you're trying to get to know somebody. So I think from a reality, you know, obviously nobody wants to sit in a pod and talk to somebody behind a wall that you can't see them, like, it's going to be awkward. And who knows what else, what they talked about. Like, obviously it's an edited TV show.
Yeah, we're getting a couple minutes of like many, many, many hours, you would think, right? Like, they didn't have anything else to do, so.
Yeah, and it's funny, as we kind of maybe transition into spoilers, but they do talk a little bit about, you know, what it was like dating each other in the pods and like what they did talk about. And it seemed like not only were they talking about themselves, but they were kind of trying to make it fun and have their personality shine, you know, throughout that process. So I think there is an absence, but I think that some of these people actually took that to their advantage and let, you know, the better parts of them and their personality really shine through.
I have two more pre-spoiler things, but they're quick ones. One is that I don't think that I'm a super huge fan of the Lachey's as hosts, but that could be attributed to the fact that the writers insisted that every episode ask the question, is love really blind? 1,000 fucking times. Like, shut up, right? Like, I could hate them just by like virtue of the fact that the writers forced them to say that 1,000,000,000 times. But what did you guys like the Lachey's? And I also really rubbed me the wrong way that every time Nick introduced himself, he'd be like, and obviously, I am Nick Lachey. It's like, dude, you don't know. That's not the check you think it is that you're cashing over here at the bank. But
I definitely did not like them. And like,
okay, good, thank you.
And terrible. The saving grace though is in those five episodes that I saw, like they're really not in it that much. They probably show up like once an episode for 30 seconds, and you know they explain you know what the next stage is, but then they basically disappear, and it's mostly the couples.
That just goes to show how little we like them. That like they literally are, they're like have a total of like 2.5 minutes airtime in the entire series, and we're like, we don't really like them.
I mean, I had to convince people like you don't see them a lot. Keep watching the show. Don't
you
worry.
Shouldn't even mention. You don't see them a lot. Oh my god, that's terrible. Okay, that was my point one. So I'm glad we all agree. And my point two, pre-spoiler, is that like, I have to give kudos to whoever chose the music for this whole show, because it's almost like they searched by lyric, like in reverse. So like, for example, they go off on their vacations and they're like nervous, you know, that like, oh, now we have to like interact in the physical world. Like, how will this go? And then a song plays and it's like, take the rest of me, like you already have the first half of me. And it's like, what, how did you even find that lyric? Like, or like at one point they're fighting, I think that was a fight on the vacation that I'm sure you guys know about, and like the lyrics were like, say anything, say you hate me even. And I was just like, how are they doing this? Like, and it was the whole show long. So if you're not paying attention to like the lyric injections of what exactly is happening, if you really want to know exactly on the nose exactly what's happening in this scene, just listen to the music lyrics, because it is insane how they did it. I don't even know where they found these songs.
I did not notice that. But I might have to watch it a third time to check it out. Yeah,
it might as well have been like, this reality show is hard to be on, but you're doing great, or something. Like, it might as well have been that specific. Like, call them out by name. Why don't you? Maybe they had the songs written. I don't know.
Right, because they are like not songs you've heard before, but they. I mean, this is sort of similar to Terrace House, and maybe it's true in other reality shows too. I just don't know, but like. It's the thing where they sound like familiar songs and like hit songs you've heard. And then when you listen closely, you're like, oh, no. This is like a song I've never heard before that no one has ever heard before. You know, it's probably like...
No one has ever heard before.
It's like on some like stock music service or that they had written for the show, but sounds like popular music. And then, like you said, has lyrics that is very, very on the nose for what's happening on screen.
Absolutely. It blew my mind. So, again, kudos. Whoever's in that job, just... Make yourself a nice hot cup of tea and just know that I'm thinking about you. I've been thinking about you. You're doing great, man. Sweetie, whoever you are, you're doing great.
All right, well, let's move into spoilers. So if you don't want to know what happens during Love is Blind, you should stop listening now. So I'm wondering how we want to do it. I wonder if maybe the best way to do this is to talk about individual couples, and we can sort of then talk about the full arc rather than, you know, summarizing each individual episode.
Can we start from most boring to least boring?
Yeah, let's do that. So let's use your ranking.
My vote. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Let's figure it out. So my vote for most boring, I think, would be Kelly and Kenny.
Yes.
Okay, so let's just get those guys over with. I thought she was really misleading. I don't know if it was a matter of the way that it was filmed or what, but like I felt like in the beginning they were really good, and I think that for whatever reason, the edit or whatever, I felt led to believe that they were really good until like the episode of their wedding, essentially. Like, I mean, she obviously was hesitant about having sex with him, which is never like a great sign. I mean, it depends on the situation. Obviously, people have their principles and boundaries. So like, I'm not saying it's always a bad sign, right? But like, it seemed like she was willing to be sexual with past partners, but didn't want to be that way with him, which I think says something. But he was just also such a good guy, or is a good guy. Like, I think even her mom at the wedding was like, man, I just love this guy, you know, like he's just a good solid dude. So, I mean, those are my thoughts.
So remind people who Kelly and Kenny are.
Kelly and Kenny. Kenny is the blonde people. You mean you.
but also, we generally try to do the spoiler section so that people who don't mind being spoiled can still understand what we're
talking
about.
Kenny is the blonde. I'm sorry. I just dove straight in, didn't I? Kenny is the blondish guy. He has like a little bit of facial hair, tall, skinny. And Kelly is the brunette girl. She's shorter, who is like the fitness coach. And they seemed really good, like almost like boring in a good way. They were boring in a good way in that like there was not much to report because they just seemed like really happy, like two kind of like dorks in love, and like let them be, like they're not, there's nothing to report there. And then all of a sudden it was like, well, she doesn't want to have sex, but he wasn't too worried about that. I just wasn't too worried about that either for whatever reason. And then I guess it became like a growing issue. And then she said no to him. And their like parents were so supportive. It was like one of the only couples whose both sides, both parents were like, this is great. Like, you guys are going to be so happy. And I think also both their parents had gotten married really quickly. Like, both of their parents were like married within 6 months. So
it wasn't like out of normal.
Yeah, they were like, oh, this could happen, like this happened to us, look at us, we've been married for like 45 years and like we got married in like 2 months or whatever, you know. So anyway, that one was pretty sad, but I think the way that Kenny handled it, like, just again, like, lots of respect for that guy. I think he came out looking good, in my opinion.
Yeah, I feel like in general, at least in the early part of the season, you also just see less of them than virtually any other couple. And like,
right.
Whenever you cut back to them, you're like, oh wait, who are you? Oh right, yeah, you guys seem nice, and I think they both seem like very emotionally mature people who can like just talk about their feelings in a fairly straightforward, non-dramatic way, and that's probably why you don't see a whole lot of them.
Yeah, those guys were pretty boring, and I had a lot of my other friends like, who are they again? Like, what was their story? Like, they didn't really have like a story arc. It was kind of like, oh yeah, we met, you're cool, that's, you know. And they were just even keel just the whole time. So yeah, I'm with you, Jordan. It was kind of a shock to find out that you know, she said no, but you know, I guess they're both fine. According to the reunion.
Yeah, they both are with other people, right?
She's not, but he is in a relationship.
Oh, yeah, she was with someone else, but then that ended. Yeah, all is as it should be. So let's move on. Who is the next most boring couple? I think that my vote for this one is tough because we start getting real interesting pretty quickly. Maybe Giannina and Damien, even though they aren't the most boring, they're like my, I just don't like them.
I would actually say Cameron and Lauren.
Yeah, Cameron and Lauren are pretty boring, actually. You're totally right.
You know, because like, okay, they met, great, sparks flew, you know, they had the interracial thing, but like, he had already dated black girls in the past, you know, and she seemed pretty happy with him. And when they met the family, you know, her dad gave him a little bit of a hard time, but ultimately, you know, I think they were both pretty lovey-dovey with each other, and it just kind of worked. And it's,
yeah, one of the things I was like, I don't know if the edit made it this way, where like they tried to make Lauren seem shakier than she actually was, like, because they really played up like her indecision, and like she did refuse to tell him before the wedding that like she was gonna actually go through with it. Like, he had to find out in the moment, which I do think, as like, just I have to say, of the show, the fact that it comes down to a decision they make at the wedding. Like, it's not like normally when like an officiant of a wedding starts a wedding, it's like a pretty sure thing already, like they're both standing there, so like they're getting married. But this one is always like, we're gonna find out, like, is love truly blind? And like, you know, what do you think? And they have to give these speeches about like if they're actually gonna go through with it or not. It's weird.
So that you could like give a speech that ends with, and that is why I'm not marrying you.
Yes, goodbye. Totally. And like front of everyone in that moment. It's so weird. Like, it's like such a weird way to do it. Like none of them were like, I'm not going to walk down the aisle because I don't want to do this. They were like, I have to deliver this news right on the altar. Like that's the only place. And the question the pastors always ask, or like the, you know, officiants or whatever, was like, will you choose to commit your life to this other person in the holiest of matrimony, or will you walk away from them forever? It's like, wait, like it's been 8 weeks. Like that is so binary. It's like, oh my God, it's so crazy. But anyways, back to Lauren and Cameron. I felt like maybe the edit like misled us a little bit, or maybe she wasn't as sure as she should have been, but they were just, I think like one of the more interesting things about them, I mean, I did think that the dad conversation and the way that that whole thing played out was pretty interesting, but I also think that Cameron having like a full house and being like, this is the house that the babies will be in, and this is their room, and I already painted it half blue, half pink, and we could go yellow if you want. Like, what do you think? And she was like, yo, bro, like, this is what the hell? Like, he was just ready to get married, which I don't think is bad, but
I thought that was also the episode where they started that like doubt seeding, where she was like, oh, maybe if I keep my studio, like, would you be cool with that? And he was like, oh, no, I got like this big old house.
Yeah, like I did buy this massive house for us to raise children in. She's like, but location. But yeah, I thought that they were fine. They were cute. I'm glad they're still together. Like, good for them.
I liked watching them. It just was very comforting because it felt like, I mean, at the beginning, calming. I was kind of didn't believe it because they were the first to propose and they were both just 100% in from the start. But then for like later, as there's more drama between the couples, like, and they seemed so kind of steady, although it sounds like later on there's some questions, but I was just like, yes, I will watch this 5 minutes and like my pulse will go down and I can like relax for a bit.
So true. Very zen energy coming from them.
Well, I think also it's just like I think they just wanted to show like, hey, this actually does work. Like, here's somebody like,
we're not insane. We're not monsters.
Just kind of level setting it. You know, to get our hearts broken with the other couples, but that's fine.
Okay, so then you said who you mentioned somebody else, right, is kind of boring too. Oh, Damien and Giannina.
Yeah, they weren't really boring, but they were just like grating on my patience a little bit. Although, you know, it would be fair to talk about Diamond and Carlton before that.
Okay, yeah. So the big thing there is that Carlton is bisexual or has dated men in the past, and he says kind of from the start that he has this secret that he has to lay on her at some point, and so he decides not to mention this before the proposal, and they go to Mexico, and he acts as if he has, you know, this terrible weight on his shoulders, and then finally tells her, and they have a sort of an awkward conversation. And then they have a follow-up conversation, which just turns into this huge fight and basically ends the relationship. Not boring, I will say. In fact, agonizing. Not boring. Absolutely agonizing. Like, I like kept, like, my hand kept hovering over the fast-forward button because I was just like, oh, this is so painful, so painful.
Well, it was, like, one of the clearest situations where I felt like neither one of them... I might be being too forgiving in one direction or the other, or both, honestly, but, like, you know, whatever. My read on it is that, like, I don't think either of them meant most of what they said. It's, like, a very classic example, I think, of people being protective of themselves and letting the conversation devolve, you know? Like, he was obviously felt very, very vulnerable in that moment, and she did too. And so, you know, the first, you know, kind of words out their mouth weren't quite right. And from there, it just got worse and worse and worse, right? Like, you're just too bare in that moment to really handle it. And it's unfortunate, I think, because could have been an interesting story to watch play out and, you know, see on TV. But Unfortunately, I think that's what happens. I don't think that, I mean, I could be wrong. I don't really know. I haven't like gone and like social media stalked any of this or anything like that. So I don't really know, but it just seemed like maybe they let it get out of control and it didn't need to, you know?
Well, I mean, from, you know, the small snippets of their conversation in the pods that I could tell, I kind of felt like there might have been a little bit of pressure on like the guy side, maybe from oh god, what's his name again?
Carlton.
Carlton's side to actually propose. I didn't necessarily feel like they had like the strongest bond. And it just kind of felt like, okay, well, you know, she's cool and, you know, I'm looking to also kind of have a story and see what happens and maybe just take a chance, you know, on something. And even after they ended up, you know, meeting each other and starting their vacation, it didn't seem like their conversations were very, you know, like they were on the same page about some stuff. Like Carlton mentioned a lot, like about, hey, you're my wife, I'm going to give you a hat and it's going to say, you know, don't touch me. And she's like, what? You know, so I don't know that foundation was really there to be able to support something like that. So even if he had mentioned something and had been vulnerable to her and opened up in the pods, that they would have even gotten to the place that they were.
Yeah. I mean, what was striking to me, and I'll be honest, I'm a little nervous talking about it because I don't want to come off as a straight guy saying what is like the right or wrong way to come out to somebody. But like the way he did it was so defensive and so, you know, that like he was like angry from the start and sort of assumed she would reject him about it from the start in this way where I felt, you know, where I think like the classic version of that breakup is basically the person who's heterosexual is the one who is like the villain because they can't tolerate the other person's sexuality. But in this case, it really felt like I had a lot of empathy for her and how like it was just sort of a tough situation beyond just the fact that he revealed that he's bisexual, but the way he revealed it, the way he sort of waited for a while to reveal it and then was very kind of defensive and confrontational about it. Like I felt like I understood why she wasn't immediately like, yes, awesome, let's do this.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was, you know, I think he was emotional about it. He had a really tough time even just saying it. And she was like pulling teeth just to get him to like open up because she could sense that something was wrong. You know, but I think that, you know, from her perspective, you know, it's something that is, you know, we were supposed to, you know, bare ourselves to each other beforehand. So I think for her, it was really more of like, why are you hiding it? You know, is there something else? And I think those kind of doubts were really more of like, you know, in her mind potentially, you know, but I think also from his perspective, you know, I wouldn't judge anybody for, you know, living their life and their sexuality and, you know, it's got to be really, really tough to, I guess, be honest, not only like with yourself, but also with the people around you. And it just sounds like he's had a really rough time with explaining that part of himself to friends, family, maybe. And it's definitely like, you know, being sexually fluid is a concept that's not as, you know, understood, I think, still. You know, it's hard concept for a lot of people to grasp. So I can empathize again, same as you feel, Anthony. I can kind of empathize right. From both sides,
totally
about it.
I think he should have probably told her earlier, but like you said, they didn't get as far. It felt like emotionally, like building trust and a bond in the pods as the other couples. You know what I mean? But like, just something to give like. That is the trust moment that you need, right? Like the trust and bond moment where you can actually talk it out and figure it out as opposed to doing it with so much pressure on the back end. Like it's not my, you know, obviously people come out in their own time and when they feel safe and ready and stuff, but just strategically, you know, you put yourself in a much safer position doing that beforehand, in my opinion. But.
And it seems like they both kind of understood that, like at the reunion, you know, I felt like they were definitely on the path of like, you know, maybe being friends. And I feel like there's some genuine, you know, desire to at least, you know, take it as a learning experience and move on. So that was very heartening to kind of see that at the reunion today.
So Giannina and Damien, it sounds like, Jordan, you found them pretty frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just, like I said, they both felt like kind of acty to me, in a way, like performative, in a way that just like, I don't know, rubbed me the wrong way. Like I couldn't find a ton of authenticity with those guys, which I think, I don't know, I just didn't like so much.
I think Giannina was definitely kind of all over the place, you know, not to completely bring age into it, but you know, she's young. You know, she's seems like she's got a lot going on, and you know, she's a fiery girl, very passionate person. But in some of the interactions between and the arguments that they had, it just didn't seem like she was very interested in listening or having a dialogue. You know, it was more like, you know, you shut up, you listen to me, I'm talking, yet what I'm saying is not, doesn't necessarily make sense, or it's contradictory. So it was really hard to, I think, empathize with her. Or even from Damien's perspective, I just felt he was very flat. He's very, like, yeah, like two-dimensional.
Spineless, almost. Like, it was almost like, you know, she was very, like you said, she's a very passionate person. And sometimes those fights devolved into her just, like, almost like a snake bite. You know, like, it wasn't necessary for you to say that. Like, it was just like, here, this hurts, bam, you know what I mean? And the more he tried to work around that, the less respect I had for him as well, who I already didn't really like have any real attachment to begin with. So it just like felt like it was just like kind of both going down this road of like, I don't care to watch you two.
All right, well, then we should move on to, I think, two couples that we kind of have to talk about together, which are the final two couples, Amber and Barnett, and Jessica and Mark, who I think sounds like we all agree are probably the most interesting couples, or at least, I mean, they're the most dramatic because there is this sort of tension there.
Yeah, so I think maybe Mark and Jessica to start. Like, Mark, Jessica seemed pretty contrite in the reunion episode. I'm sure, I mean, I don't know how you can be that and watch that on TV and not be like, I have some real introspection to do.
Props so, to her for seems, coming on that show. I was like,
seriously, like, wild. And she handled herself pretty well on that show, so I give her a lot of credit for that, at least from what I've seen of it. However, like, I mean, poor Mark. Mark is, you know, a young man, a lot to learn, I think, in terms of, you know, he said a lot that he knows his own value. You got to prove it, too. You know, like, she wasn't treating him with the respect I think he deserved, particularly for how he was treating her and how he was approaching things. Very mature, you know, for him. So that was just, like, tough to watch in general. I do think, like, Mark is about as good as it could get for Jessica. At least that state of Jessica, you know, that we saw on the show. And she was kind of dumb for not just trying to embrace it. I mean, everyone has their own feelings, but like, I just feel like you have this person who you clearly do have some sort of connection with, who's just loving you, like, stay focused, you know. But anyway, what did you guys think of Jessica and Mark?
Well, I mean, you know, I think obviously Mark is a great guy. He seems like a really great guy. I think also for Jessica, like, putting her in a moment where it's like she has this connection with these two people, you know, and one day one guy is like, yeah, I'm really into you, and the next day he's like, no, you know, it's over. You know, I think that probably messed her up a lot, you know, and then seeing him, like, I definitely empathize with her. I don't think she handled it, you know, in the best manner. And it's really tough to kind of see all that, you know, love, you know, and caring that Mark was giving to her that wasn't really being reciprocated. And I think that, like, deep down inside, I kind of felt like I really wanted her to, like, her eyes to open and just be like, oh my God, you know what? This is the best. And I feel like the show kind of led you to believe, like, oh yeah, she was going to say yes at the end. And I really was rooting for that deep inside. Like, I really did want her to kind of, you know, recognize and appreciate Mark for all he was giving. You know, so it was disappointing to see. I respect her decision, obviously, because it might have turned into, you know, not a great situation if they did end up getting married and she hadn't resolved, like, her, you know, feelings or, you know, potential feelings with Barnett. At that point, or, you know, had they seen the show, like, further along the line and she had never come clean about it, like, it probably wouldn't have played out too well for that relationship. But yeah, that's pretty much my take on that.
Yeah, I wasn't, like, crazy about Mark just as, like, a character, but, like, one thing that I thought was really impressive about him was, you know, that there is this sort of, for both Jessica and then Barnett, who we're about to talk about as well, you know, that they're both, like, sort of making these decisions and between people who they feel a connection with. And in Jessica's case, she basically chooses Barnett and tells Mark that, and then has to come back and say, oh, wait, I take it all back. And you know, I think probably that's where I wonder about the edit there, exactly what the conversation was like afterwards, but it was, and that's not an easy situation. And in some ways, it's a ridiculous sort of offshoot of the whole setup of the show, of how, like, you have to, like, make these decisions so quickly with such limited experience. But I think in some ways, it's also just a more intense version of a thing that happens that can happen to anyone when they're dating, which is sometimes you hit a point where you're like, okay, well, it could be this person or it could be this person. And, you know, I don't necessarily, you know, you just sort of have to pick one, and that may or may not be the right choice. And so, the way that Mark was, you know, I felt like still tried to maintain some degree of self-respect and to say, listen, I'm not somebody's second choice. I'm not interested in being your fallback. And I could imagine in, like, a real dating scenario that you could potentially then, like, take a break. And then maybe, like, in a few months, we can revisit this and see if we can rebuild this into something. But, like, to have to do that in such an abbreviated period of time and to have, like, such a serious blow to the relationship and then try to rebuild it really quickly. I mean, it seems like it was really, really hard. All right, should we talk about Barnett and Amber then?
I think we should talk about Barnett and Amber, because these are the two that I probably, like, had the most just, like, distaste for at the beginning of the show. Like, I mean, actually, Amber, to be fair, I could not see myself being friends with her or anything, like, not like a person I would really like, but I was excited to watch her on reality television because I thought she just brought a lot of energy to things. So I, like, wasn't like, oh, I don't like her to the point where I don't want to watch her, which is kind of how I felt about, like, Damien. But Barnett, I was like, oh no, like, actually kind of the similar feeling where, like, you're gonna be a total, like, emotional terrorist, but in a way that I'm excited about, but I also can't stand you and you're terrible. But then when they started, you know, obviously there were some bumps in the road and Barnett couldn't choose between Jessica and LC and Amber, all three of them. But once Amber and him were kind of together, like, for sure, it just felt like they were both, I don't know, they just felt like they were really genuine for whatever reason. Like, it just felt really authentic that they were kind of over the moon for each other. They were really excited, and that they would just kind of, like, this young love mentality of, like, whatever it is, we'll just, like, figure it out, you know, like, oh, you have, like, crushing debt, like, okay, like, I don't feel great about it, but, like, here we are. And even up until the end, like, at the wedding, you know, Barnett felt like he was kind of punking her. I don't think he was as unsure as the edit made us think he was. I think he was literally just fucking around with her because that's his personality. But yeah, I thought they were fun to watch, and I ended up, I think they both like are kind of growing together in a way, and I've enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Barnett for me was like, he reminded me a lot of one of my a friend of mine that I had in my 20s who I'm not going to name, even though I don't think he listens to the podcast, but like this sort of like real confident dude who just has this very kind of laid back energy. And for that reason, I both like found him incredibly watchable, but so, so frustrating at the same time. And, I think as television, it was great. And like, I mean, I loved also just the footage of Barnett in his room. Cause you see women who are, I mean, some of the men too, but mostly the women who get very dressed up for these
dates. Very dressed up. Yeah.
And you realize, I think they're not dressed up for the guy. They're dressed up for us because they're being filmed.
Yeah.
And Barnett was the opposite. Like, he would roll in cargo shorts and just like sprawl out on the couch and like not give a shit. And it was so funny because it really felt like I was just seeing, you know, the most relaxed. And maybe he's not like this in real life, but how it felt to me watching was like this. The most laid-back guy who just did not care how he came off on camera, just like talking, the equivalent of like talking on the phone. And it was hilarious to me.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny that he was in sweats the whole time. But like, he also kind of pulled him off.
Yeah, I mean, not to say that, I mean, I think he's a very good-looking man, and that's probably, you know, why he can get away with some of the stuff
I think he probably looks better in some of those outfits than he did at, like, more formal things later on.
Like at the reunion?
Yeah, definitely. Oh, my God. I'm actually, like, part of me was like, how did Amber allow this? And I was like, of course Amber allowed this. Like, what am I thinking? But like, wow. So Anthony, I don't know if you've seen like any of the reunion or clips or anything.
Not.
So Barnett is wearing like I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a fluorescent silver.
Like, is it like a zebra print or something like that?
It doesn't even look like it has like any math to it. It's totally random. Like it's like a speckled, or like maybe it's a spider web. You don't really know what it's supposed to be. But it's like silver and black blazer.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It is.
And like Amber looks really nice.
It's kind of growing on me.
Amber looked really elegant. No, it's not growing on you. Get out of here.
It's not elegant though. I will admit that it's not elegant. It's a bold choice is what I would say.
Well, it's like, I don't know. Do you really have to like, look at me. Like, you guys are Amber and Barnett. Like, know your value. You know what I mean? Anyway, I just felt like that was rough. And I liked when Barnett was in his sweats, for sure, more than his suit at the at the reunion.
Oh. I think Barnett definitely liked having, you know, the paradox of choice, you know, was so overwhelming. But I think he did choose right for him. You know, it seems like him and Amber have, you know, a good similar energy, and they've taken that through to their marriage. It was interesting, though, at the reunion that they were talking about switching from, you know, dating to being married, and how that transition was difficult for them over the year that they've been married. And that he would, you know, and I guess she would also, you know, go out and act as if, you know, they were single. And then that was a kind of difficult transition for them, probably more difficult for Barnett than it really was for Amber, because she seemed real married, real anxious to be like, you're on lockdown and this is mine and I'm now off the market and all that other kind of stuff. So I think the concerning to me, and that the thing that I was most interested in that they semi-addressed at the reunion was, you know, the fact that, you know, she didn't necessarily have a steady job and, you know, she was couch surfing, I think, at the time that they got engaged. So it's just knowing that she would have to be reliant on him, you know, for that, and like how he would feel about that. And it seems like, you know, they've worked through that, but that it was one of the concerns, you know, from both of their ends in making the marriage work. So I'm glad to see that they worked that stuff out. But it that was a little, like, you didn't talk about, like, your job sitch and, like, all this stuff beforehand?
I did like when he was like, what do you do all day? Like, what exactly are you doing? I don't know what she does.
Yeah, neither do I.
All right, well, is there anything else about the show that we want to talk about?
It's good. I do think that, like, Netflix is doing something. I can't really put my finger on it, but I was thinking about this a little bit last night. Like, Netflix reality television is kind of carving its own space for itself a little bit. Like, not so far away from other reality television that you're like, what the fuck is this? But, you know, it's still your bread and butter reality, but they do something with look and feel and framework, the minor tweaks they make from what you see on a ABC or whatever. It's interesting. That's as far as I feel like I can go specifically right now, but I'm noticing that. I don't know if you guys are too.
Yeah, I think their research team definitely hit the nail on the head with this one. Just, I think, taking, like, the most appealing aspects, you know, the things that people actually connect with and are interested in from the myriad of dating reality that's out there, and kind of crafting something that's, again, in its own space, and doing a dialogue and approaching it from, I think, just a more genuine space, I think is unique here. And definitely looking forward to season two.
Yeah, for sure.
One thing I'm curious about is just, you know, I think the other reality show, Netflix reality shows that I've seen at least, have tended to be not sort of, I mean, this isn't exactly a competition, but that it's sort of more structured and a little more artificial in some ways than, like, you know, a Queer Eye or a Terrace House or the Marie Kondo show. In the sense that it's much more about, let's, at least at the beginning, let's take people outside their real environment and sort of construct this whole thing around them, and it's, you know, you can see that also in the way they released it, where it's over several weeks leading up to this climax. And one thing I'm curious about is, I feel like if I, you know, could go back and watch the first season of Terrace House, or not the first season, but the Netflix seasons of Terrace House or any of those other shows now, and I would still enjoy it. It didn't really matter when I watched it. And I'm curious, with Love is Blind, do you feel like you kind of got to be watching it close to live, when everyone's talking about it, all this speculation is happening, and that if somebody 6 months from now tries to watch the show, they'll be like, why was everyone so hyped about this?
No, I think the bigger problem will be that it's going to be hard to watch it without having heard about it. I mean, maybe not, like, hard for some people who, like, the internet thinks they have zero interest whatsoever in reality television, and their Twitter and Instagram and, you know, all of this other stuff is kind of like algorithmically veering them away from it. But that, I think the conversation is pretty pervasive. It's kind of out there in the memes and stuff like that. I saw one this morning that was like, good morning to everyone but Jessica from Love is Blind. So I think that, like, it's out there a little bit. The bigger problem is just that it's all, you're going to have known all the jokes and kind of been spoiled a little bit. But no, I think it's great to be a part of this conversation. It makes it more fun. I was tweeting during the show, and I normally don't tweet about really anything but TechCrunch events. and that was a little bit fun. Had a couple conversations there and saw some fun stuff. But I don't think it takes too much away if you watch it later, other than, you know, we're all talking about it now. Join us.
Cool. All right. Well, let's wrap things up there then. Before we go, I will just do my obligatory reminder that you can always email us at originalcontent@techcrunch.com. Let us know what you think of Love is Blind. Let us know what you think of this episode of the podcast. And if you have something interesting to say, we'll read it on the show. And if you like what we're doing, it's also very helpful if you subscribe and leave us a positive review on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app that you enjoy. And Jordan and Alex, have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, you too. Woohoo!